Why not get a real blaster? Boxes of 44 wheel guns over there. Plenty of brass, too.
Doc's hands were busy purging the spent chambers of his Lama as a preliminary to reloading.
Let the artist choose his own brush. This has served me well, and I seek no other mistress.
This was an old argument between the two, and the teen shrugged, as always, at the impossibility of convincing the scholar otherwise. Going to a row of cabinets, Jack began opening each door and checking inside for anything good. There were a lot of uniforms, combat boots, gas masks, night goggles, and a few items that he couldn't readily identify. Have to ask Mildred about those later, Jack decided, closing the door to continue his wreck of the locker.
Besides, being able to fire 9 rounds without stopping, this has startled more cold hearts than I wish to remember.
For a split second, Doc recalled the day when he'd faced that wolfweed dealer in the dusty streets of the burning New Mexville. Doc had known the other fellow was out of range, and so he'd fired the Lama 6 times, then only fanned the hammer a couple of times to make the Civil War blaster click loudly. Grinning in triumph, the dealer had charged straight at Doc and raised his axe for a fast kill, but when the dealer got within 10 feet, point-blank range, Doc had raised the Lama and fired 3 more times, ending the Cold Heart's regime of terror forever. Doc closed the fully loaded cylinder.
9 is fine.
Prying a board free from a packing crate, Christie gazed appreciatively at the sight of the brand new HK G11 caseless rifles nestled inside. The plastic boxes alongside obviously contained spare ammo blocks. There was a score of them, perhaps more. She started to reach for one of the angular rapid fires, then frowned and closed the lid. Dean Cotter had really liked this weapon, in spite of its faults. Actually, the caseless rapid fire only had a single flaw. It worked too efficiently. All by himself, Dean had once stopped a pack of muties with the dire weapon, only to discover that the rapid fire was empty. The boy had used the entire ammo block of 100 rounds in only a few heartbeats. The priceless weapon had been abandoned in the street, useless without a replacement block.
Find something?
Jack had draped a bandolier of ammo clips across his leather jacket. He was holding an MP5 submachine gun, repeatedly pulling the bolt to work out the stiffness of the pre-dark spring. The gun had been properly packed in anti-corrosive gelatin, but that was easy to wash off with the accompanying solvent. Wordlessly, Christie shook her head and continued to search. She truly missed Dean.
Well, I'll be damned.
Ryan lifted a peculiar-looking grin into view. A whole case of implogrens. This was the find of a lifetime. Not even Mildred had any idea how the things worked. The tech involved was far beyond her understanding of 20th century science. The burnished gray sphere looked like a standard mill grin, but instead of a C4 explosion or thermite blast, it somehow generated a massive gravity field for a split second that destroyed anything caught within the collapsing zone. An implogren could stop a tank and would smash a SecHunter droid like the angry fist of God. Judiciously deciding between weight and mobility, Ryan finally took 4 of the implogrens and added a 5th to his jacket pocket. For the first time since they had arrived, the Deathlands warrior allowed himself to relax slightly. Whatever came their way now could be aced. Nor mech or muty, nothing could stand against an implogren. That was good enough. He wanted more, who wouldn't? But the first hard lesson learned in the Deathlands was that having too many weapons was just as bad as not having any. It made you slow, and a single moment wasted trying to decide what to fight with could easily be the deciding factor between living another day and ending up in the hot belly of some slavering, muty beast. Slowly, the long hours passed as the companions expertly combed the deep storage locker for all its precious treasures. Carrying bundles of equipment, they started forming neat stacks in a clear area near the open door and began to organize the materials into piles. Calling a halt for food, Ryan passed out some MRE packs, and the hungry companions devoured the pre-dark meals of beef stroganoff with sour cream and noodles, with the usual nut cake for dessert. It was just food, nothing more, but there was also coffee. Greatly refreshed, the companions returned to the work of choosing supplies and weapons. New backpacks were found to replace their old patched ones. Military bedrolls were exchanged for the civvy versions dug out of a collapsed department store in a distant land. Neat piles of ordnance were formed, and decisions made. Some of the simpler blasters were set aside as possible trade goods, in case there was a vill nearby. But for once, the companions didn't need anything from the outside world. There was food and clothing galore, plus enough weapons and brass to fight the most powerful baron in the land, if necessary. Ryan took a new pair of combat boots. A case of U.S. Army socks and underwear was greeted with cries of delight, and everybody helped themselves. Placing aside her medkit, Mildred sat on a box of landmines to exchange her socks right on the spot. The stiff cloth was cast aside, and the new soft socks were gratefully pulled on, her toes wiggling almost sensuously in the clean cloth. After a couple more hours, the companions broke for dinner. MREs again, chicken stew with dumplings this time. It was better than the beef stroganoff, and the packs were licked clean. Fed and fully armed for the first time in a long time, the companions left the deep storage locker, closing the door. It had been a long day, but there was still a lot to do before sleep could even be considered. As the terrible throbbing in his head slowly eased away, Edward awoke groggily on a grassy field, with the bright sun high overhead. He forced himself to move. His head hurt, his gut was roiling, and every bone felt as if it had been removed, then shoved back in again.
Well, it's about nuking time you came round.
John walked closer. The elder Rogan was holding a tin cup full of something that gave off wisps of steam and smelled incredibly like coffee.
We were starting to think you'd gone on the last train west, you lazy bastard.
It took Edward a few times to get his throat working. He felt as if he'd been run over by a baron's war wag.
Where the frag are we? And is that coffee?
Alan joined his brother and passed him a canteen.
We're in the zone, and yes, it is, bro. But this will do you more good.
Eagerly taking the canteen, Edward really didn't care what was in the container, as long as it was liquid. He all but ripped off the cap and poured the cool water down his parched throat. The other Rogan said nothing, waiting for their brother to get fully awake. There was a lot to discuss.
Okay. Where are we? The zone, you said? Well, that's halfway around the red blasted world.
Not quite. We're close enough.
Weighing his thoughts, Edward took another long drink from the canteen.
Well, how fraggin' long have I been out?
Since last night. Been about half a day.
A single day, and they had reached the zone? Raising stiffly to his feet, Edward took another swig from the canteen and warily looked around. Desert, sand, and cactus were all gone. Now the brothers were in a grassy field, a glade, really, with a smoky campfire crackling away in a small pit. An iron pot was sitting on a flat rock near the flames, its dark, watery contents bubbling softly and giving off the aroma of black coffee. Tall green trees surrounded the glen, and there was the sound of splashing water from somewhere nearby. A concrete building of some kind stood nearby. Then he froze as his gaze fell upon the machines. There were four big bikes, unlike any two-wheelers he had ever seen before. The sleek motorcycles were sitting in a pool of the bright sunlight, all of them painted a deep satiny black, the chrome trim edging the frames, shining mirror bright. Walking straight past the cook fire, Edward headed for the bikes. He couldn't take his sight off the beautiful vehicles. He'd seen a lot of different bikes when he traveled with the Hellrider gang in the Southwest, but those were patchwork monsters held together with baling wire and duct tape. These machines gleamed as if brand new, and they were huge, much larger than any two-wheeler he had ever seen. And they were in perfect condition. Strapped across the rear fender were large cargo pods, molded to the frame as if installed there when the bikes were manufactured before Skydark. The lids were open on the pods, and Edward stared inside to see rolls of clothing, self-heat cans of food, knives and sheaths, boots, and grins. The loot of a vill, a baron's ransom. Edward ran a hand across the cushioned leather seat of a bike. It was the softest thing he'd ever felt, and blacker than midnight.
Where and when did we steal those?
Advance payment from Delphi. We each get one.
Huh? Delphi? What did that triple damn outlander hit me with anyway, a grin?
Who knows? There was a flash of light and you dropped like a wrinkly with his knees blown off.
No shit. So, how did we get here?
Beats the living shit out of me, bro.
Robert thrust a long blaster at the puzzled man.
Here. This is for you, little brother. Boy Jack from Delphi.
Taking the complex weapon, Edward couldn't believe his eyes. It was a rapid fire, and also in perfect condition. Not a scratch or a fleck of rust on the metal. Just like the bikes. There were two barrels, two triggers, and a crosshair scope on the top. He'd never seen anything like them in his life.
Delphi called them an M16-M203 assault rifle combo. You press that to get the ammo clip out or back in.
Clumsily moving his big hands along the blaster, Edward did as directed and released the clip. Pulling it free, he gasped at the full load of pre-dark brass. 30 greasy rounds. Robert lifted up a 40-millimeter shell for display.
Well, this big thing underneath is a grand launcher. You slide that part forward and shove in this. Then close before firing.
It shoots grands as well as lead? And that Delphi guy just gave us this? Wait a tick. He called it advance payment. Okay, what does he want done?
We gotta chill someone.
Edward hoisted the long blaster.
That's all?
No. We also have to capture some wrinkly alive and haul his ass back to Delphi. And alive is the big word. If we kill the wrong person, if the wrinkly gets aced by mistake, Delphi is gonna... He showed us some stuff while you were out.
Trust me, bro. We do not want to screw this up.
Pulling back the arming bolt of the rapid fire, Edward let it snap back.
Chill a man and capture a wrinkly alive. Big nukin' deal.
He started to adjust the canvas sling for his large shoulders.
And for that, we got the bikes and blasters? Delphi's a fiend.
John glanced about fearfully.
No, he isn't. And don't you say that again.
Why in nukin' hell not?
Because Delphi said he'd be keeping a watch on us. Keep your faggot yap shut. Or else.
The two brothers exchanged knowing looks for a minute, and Edward finally nodded agreement. Okay, the Outlander had really rattled his brothers. But he still had a score to settle with his Delphi, and when the time came, he wouldn't hesitate for a bloody second. Climbing onto a bike, Edward twisted the throttle, and the dashboard came alive with glowing green lights. But there was almost no sound from the engine between his thighs. Only a soft, gentle vibration. The engine was as silent as a grave. Looking backward, Edward could see that there weren't any exhaust pipes or mufflers, and there was no drive chain either. Some kind of an enclosed transmission seemed to connect the engine to the wheels, sort of like how a wag worked. He grinned at the possibilities of a silent two-wheeler.
Ha! Damn, these would be great for a night creep. So, who do we ace? Hey, what's that smell?
There was some sort of a sharp tang in the air, very similar to how wind smelled after a lightning strike, and it seemed to be coming from the engine. Do these things run on lightning?
We ace some muty lover named Ryan.
Robert reached over and turned off the bike.
Why'd you do that?
Saving juice. These things run off sunshine. They need a couple of hours of sitting every day to reload. Recharge, refuel, whatever the fuck it's called.
Sunshine?
That's what Delphi said.
Then we never have to steal shine or fuel?
Nope. They don't use it. Just daylight.
Well, shit.
Shaking his head at the concept, Edward climbed off the machine and carefully backed away so that his shadow wasn't touching the metal.
Okay. We got any idea where to find the people we're after?
Supposed to be somewhere in the zone.
Looking around the glen, Edward rubbed his jaw. The zone, eh? But that was where they were right now. Okay, so this Delphi wasn't a total feeb. Edward grinned.
Better and better. And who's the other guy we gotta do? Or is it a slut?
No. Some wrinkly called Doc.
Then John took the big man by the jaw and forced him to look directly into his eyes.
Doc Tanner. And we capture him alive, Phoebe. Alive. You remember that?
Although almost twice the size of the other man, Edward had no wish to ever cross his brother. The older man enjoyed giving folks pain, and Edward had gotten more than his fair share when they were all growing up together in the ruins of a border ville.
Yeah, sure, no problem. Live, sure, whatever you say.
And don't forget again. Hey, it'll be a slice. They travel together like us. We find one, we find the other.
Are they kin too?
Who gives a hot damn?
Just asking.
Edward felt and heard his stomach rumble.
Well, I gotta eat before we roll anyway. My gut is so empty I feel like I've been drinking acid rain.
Yeah, I thought so.
Alan hitched up his ammo belt. A wide belt of leather pouches across his chest bulged with clips for the rapid fire, along with a couple of spare shells for the Gren launcher.